Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by returning guest Kayvon Kay, the sales system expert for founders ready to scale from $100,000 to $1 million+ dollar months. With 20 years on the front lines, Kayvon has trained over 30,000 sales pros in over 101 countries. He's revived sales for global brands and closed $265,000 from dev leads in just 30 days. He's a $375 million keynote speaker and the host of the Pitch Me podcast. He understands real sales psychology, call control, and building teams that close with conviction, not scripts. I've asked him to come back on our show to update us on his story and help us stop bleeding deals and better build our own closing machine. So Kayvon, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I was thinking, where did you get all this information? But yes, I love it.
Yeah, appreciate having you on here, man. It's
been a minute.
For people that don't know, how'd you even get started? Like, were your parents in sales and you just kind of carrying the torch?
We're going way back there. Yeah, no, both my parents were definitely not in sales. I came from the bottom half of that made the top half perfect, right? So my dad was a factory worker. My mom just stayed home and tried to just take care of the family. So I think where I got that grit from was, you know, growing up with not having anything. Sales has just been part of my entire life. I mean, they written me off. I go back, man, it's weird now at 40 saying the same stuff, but like they written me off at grade one, failed me, said I wasn't good enough. And then from that moment, I was just in sale mode. You know, I called it sales mode, but it was really called survival mode. And, you know, it was proving my worth, proving, you know, how they were wrong. And then that just kind of morphed into a sales career. And that's kind of where I landed. Because like, God forbid, I wanted to be a doctor. There was no way I was ever allowed to be a doctor. I wasn't smart enough. That was what was given to me. So that means I couldn't be a teacher. I couldn't be an accountant. There was nothing for me until someone was like, hey, just come get a sales job. And that kind of took the career to where it is today.
That's fantastic. Has it been all sunshine and rainbows? Like you got your reps when you were a kid. Great. You just talent. You
have. Don't even get me started. It's been nothing but hard work. The truth is, it's been all failure. It's what it feels like anyway. More failure than success. But, you know, I just keep leveling up with failure. And I think that's what it is. You don't level up with success. You level up with failure. Because come failure, you learn what doesn't work, what can't be implemented. And then you get to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. In order to leave one stage to the next stage, I think you have to go through some sort of failure, some sort of breakthrough, or you're just never growing. So yeah. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
I love that. Well, you know, it's always going to be hard before it's easy, right? No one just gets on the bicycle and starts doing. Really, so I like to think of it almost like treading water. If you're not failing, you're not even treading water yet. You got to go through. It's like basketball. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take in the beginning. Yeah. You're going to miss all of them. So failure is easy to achieve. And that's where everyone has to start. And nobody wants to deal with that.
And to give up their comfort zone, right? And the reality is that we all know this. Greatness doesn't happen in your comfort zone. But here's the thing. They're not willing to get uncomfortable and go in the unknown because the unknown is scary and they don't realize like it is scary. And that's what our brain was supposed to do. Our subconscious is holding us back. So if you don't do the work, the inner work, and understand how your subconscious is built off of everyone else's values, everyone else's stories, that's not your shit. It was your parents, it's society's, and realize that your subconscious is what rules you. Until you actually do the work to fix that subconscious, you're never going to make the leap because a leap is scary and your subconscious is like, don't do it. It's going to fail. Don't do it. You're going to get hurt. Yeah. Great. That's what the job is for that. But that will never in business and life get you anything of significance. Yeah. Living like that will keep you mundane, will keep you average. We'll keep you going to the average restaurants with the average waiters, with the average seats and the average parking spots. And if that's what average is and you like average, by all means, you're living your happiest life. I sure as hell saw what below average was. And I wasn't subscribing to that.
Most people don't have results because they're waiting until they feel like it. And they're never going to feel it. Because struggle, effort, and pain is the fire that baptizes you of weakness to make you worthy of the goals that you're after. If I could give someone a gold medal from the Olympics right now and they wouldn't, it wouldn't matter. There'd be no significance to it. They didn't earn it.
And earn that's it. Real,
and that's exactly it. And it's the fire that baptizes you of your weakness. It's
well, there's so much other things too. Why do lottery winners 99% lose the money in 3 years?
Yeah.
Same thing. It's like if I gave you my thriving business today, it would not be thriving tomorrow.
Right.
Very, very simple, because the way you operate, you're a direct reflection of the results you get. And the way you're operating is not like a seven-figure business owner or an eight-figure business owner.
Yeah.
You're operating, right? Like whatever it is, you know what I mean? So I always say, someone's like, you know, I see people who are like stuck at 10 million all the time. Right. And they're like, I want to get 100 million. And they don't realize, like, then you can't be the person who's operating at 10 million, even though in their mind, like that's the best they've ever been. Like that's the epitome. Like they're like, this is my, what do you mean? I got to be someone different.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at facts. You've been doing this. You've hired this person. You've been doing this. And what are the results it's producing? $10 million. But you want to go to a million. Yeah. Okay. So do you think just adding more to that is going to get you there? No. Restructuring, realizing you as a leader now need to become a $100 million leader. So your time changes. Where you focus changes. Who you now hire changes. How you invest your dollars changes. How you see your life changes. Most important, if you want to get real deep, how you see your identity changes. Because if you're just a $10 million business owner trying to get to $100 million, well, guess what? You're a $10 million business owner trying to get to $100 million. But when you shift your identity and now you're like, I'm a $100 million business owner. Okay, now we got something. But most people can't do that.
Well, it's because you're never going to run a 4-minute mile training to run it in 7 minutes. And that's that pushing point, that push, that like you have that discomfort, that just like a lot of people, I mean, I don't know how many people can relate, because a lot of people, I feel like I'm the only person that goes to the gym and actually works out. Everyone else is videotaping themselves or doing selfie videos and that, or spending more time on the phone than the machine. But you've got to get to the, you got to go to the track and you got to go, today I'm going to run it in 6.5 minutes. Today I'm going to run it in 6 minutes. And you have to be willing to do that push. You know, I two things to think about. One is the discipline that is required, and because people have these like to haves, but then they keep deciding and debating it. And discipline is making a decision one time and then never debating it again. And the second part of it is when you think about what kind of life you want to live, let's say we achieve more immortality, whether it's through an immortal soul or AI or some breakthrough. Now we have immortal existence. Okay. We're just going to start there. What would be the trophies that you would put on your mantle as an immortal? Would it be the times that you things were just given to you? That you just were like, yeah, I just, you know, whatever. And things just kind of fell in your lap. Is that what you would put on an immortal's timeline? Is that what you would prize as a possession and put over your fireplace?
No.
You know, we just live, we're so in our own mundane kind of day to day, but people have lost that. People are living such lives of instant gratification and convenience. You know, everybody's just seeking comfort. And
I mean, social media has destroyed our mindsets. Even me, you know, I'm not perfect. Like sometimes I see myself getting lost in that world, right? But like you asked me earlier, what am I grateful? I'm grateful that I have the knowledge, the wherewithal, and the subconscious training to catch myself and be like, nah, this is just distraction. This is literally what they want us to do, is get numb and up, not like our lives and be miserable, get on medication because now we're depressed. I mean, I don't want to get down the whole road, but yeah, it's just.
Well, people don't forget, like a cattle rancher farms cattle, a corn farmer farms corns, and governments govern people, which means they want to govern you, which means if you're not governable, they don't like that. And they want to encourage and facilitate things that make you easier to govern.
Well, they don't want you to. We know this. We shouldn't go down this road because now we turn to conspiracy, but they don't want you to succeed. If they wanted you to succeed, they would change the school system. They haven't changed the school system in 100 years because they don't want you to succeed, because then you are a threat to their power. People think it's about money. It's not about money. If it was about money, why hasn't Bill Gates and all the guys, you know, Elon and Trump, all these guys, why haven't they just stopped and lived their best lives? Because it's not about money. It's about, after money, it's about how much power, who can I control? The highs, they want to control everybody. And the way they control everybody is keep them down, suppress them down, make them miserable.
Well, and it's also, so there's two ways to look at it. One, I agree with you 100%. There's also, like you say, there's no summit to this mountain as an entrepreneur. I mean, I'm sure your first time you're $10 grand in a day, you're like, this is amazing. And then all of a sudden it like becomes desensitized. And that what's the next thing? There's no summit to the mountain. Like we live a life of endless desires. Every time we satisfy a desire, we'll be replaced by a new one. And so one of the things is that we are built for cooperation as humans. We are social beings. So I think these people, as they achieve things, they want to become more important. At some point you realize that in 5,000 years, your name's going to be lost in the sand. And so now you start trying to achieve significance and meaning on a grander scale, which makes you seem to others like an empire builder and a megalomaniac, which maybe you have become, but I think it comes from a genuine place of wanting to have your existence have meaning and purpose. And although you've achieved a level, it's not, you know, these people, you can't achieve these things if you have a fixed mindset. So having accomplished something, that's yesterday's news. All these people that they grow into these roles, they have a growth mindset. So it's, what am I growing into next? And some of them are growing into sociopaths, you know, for sure. But, you know, that said, it's they want to be remembered, and it's about collaboration. It's about how other people think of us. It's the whole, like, you know, pinning someone down to give them medicine type thing, I think, to a certain extent. And that's the problem with master planning, is that when you have master planners, they don't necessarily know the nuance of localities and of individual situations. And they're dealing with millions of people, the stroke of a pen. And that's why communism's always failed, because you have a small group of people that do the master planning for an entire country of 30 million people, 100 million people. They go, oh, oops. And then they forgot about something and 100,000 people died. This is sort of why the free market system is the best one, because you vote with your dollars and then the cream rises to the top. So the individual get to vote with your dollars. You're going to vote for what you think is the best for you and your situation. So what are some of the biggest mistakes people are making trying to survive in this free, even though we've got kind of crony capitalism, but that aside, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see people making when they're trying to get out there and grow their business?
Well, again, there's so many right now that I see. One of the biggest ones, I think, is doing too much. We see it again, like social media. We see other people doing this or other people do. Well, someone's doing that. Well, I'm doing that. Like, for instance, I just use simple, right? I'm trying to grow my social media. Okay, well, which one? All of them. Yeah. Well, okay, so you want to try to figure out the algorithm and figure out the formats and figure out the systems and the process for all of them, because they're all different. They all have a different conversation. They all have different, everything's different. It's like, no, figure out the one. What's the one platform you think your audience is on? Go master that. Because if you can't master that, you ain't going to master any of the other ones. Mm-hmm. So these are what I see, right? Things like, I got to run a webinar. I got to run a VSL. I got to do a challenge. Well, you haven't even hammered in and locked in your audience and the voice and the offer. And you're talking about modalities. Those are all modalities. It doesn't matter what modality you use. It happens all the way. We know, right? It's the right offer, the right message to the right person. If you don't get that right, everything else is just it. So they try to do too much. I see them try to do too much. Biggest one too is they scale too fast. They taste that little bit. They spend that money on the little Facebook ads. Oh man, I just spent $100,000 this month on Facebook ads, and I just made 150, or I made, you know, $200,000. Oh my God, let's go spend $300,000 now. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. 1 + 1 doesn't equal scale like that. And then what happens is the ads start breaking because they realize the offer actually wasn't that strong. The team they just hired to handle all that now cost them too much money. And now not only are they behind, they're behind even where they just were when they first started. Right. So scaling too fast is a massive, massive problem I see with a lot of business owners. And then I'd say the third one is if they made the mistakes that I made, is I'll just say this, is like you pull too much in the beginning. You're pulling, like, you know, we were pulling 50 to 100 grand a month to pay me and my business partner, you know, in the beginning of our business, and wondering why we had no money to grow the business.
Right.
Like, that's not, you know, that's a lot of money to be pulling out at the bottom of the business when it can be invested into people, into more, you know what I mean? Had we had just invested in more people and time and not pulled out a dollar, you know, we would have probably have been ahead way faster.
You can't have growth and profit at the same time. Typically, people are so detached from the reality of the world. We live in these little, you know, bubbled cities and societies. If you lived on a farm, you'd be way more connected with the seasons of life. And I think that's part of the problem with business, is that everything's so instant gratification now. You forget people are trying to profit while growing at the same time, but there's a time to sow and to reap. And it comes back to some of the stuff is just common sense. If you just had to live off the land. I'm in this mood because last week we got our first good harvest from our dragon fruit farm. We planted 800 dragon fruit. This is the no one's going to have to suck dick for money if Daryl dies plan for my family. We got 800 dragon fruit, and that should be produced like $100,000 a year in fruit sales at wholesale prices in the country that I'm in. And it's been about 2 years of work. And now all of a sudden we're at this place where like, oh, we just got to kind of maintain it. I'm sure there's going to be surprises, but got a really nice harvest on last week. And I'm feeling the vibe and I'm like creating an ecosystem now. I'm like planting marigolds and red clovers and I'm inoculating logs with reishi. And, you know, we're doing all this kind of stuff to create the ecosystem and companion cropping. And I come back and I go to work on my business. And I'm like, some of this is incredibly transferable in ways that people just don't realize, but you don't understand that if you grow up in a city and, you know, and you're just trying to deal with the toll booth for the TTC or whatever in Toronto, you know what I mean? And like, you're just a different world. So.
But who are we, you know, the people we're talking to are business owners, right? So they've already made that decision.
They've already made it. Well, yeah, it depends on the person. Some of these people, you know, maybe you and I, they're just unemployable, right? We don't get governed very well. We know when something.
Hey, that's like, I'll tell you right now, man. I've been fired from every job I have and I'm proud of it.
Yep.
Every job. And again, I wasn't that guy who convinced, again, it's called wherewithal, right? Like after like the fifth or sixth time I've been fired from a job and I was still young, like I was less than, you know, I was probably 27, 28 at the time. I knew pretty freaking quickly, maybe meant to be working for people.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, so some people keep getting jobs. And the problem was I knew at 40, to get fired at 40 is a lot more painful than to be fired at 28 when you have kids and the mortgage. Like I realized maybe I'm not meant to be my own boss. Like to work for someone, I meant to be my own boss. And sure enough, you know, now I realized I am. Like, it's just, I'm not like, don't tell me what to do. Like, I just, oh, ask me. And if I like it, I'll do it. But like, I'm not going to do mundane work every day for someone else's dream. Because that goes back, right? You're either working on yours, you're working on someone else's, and I am not at all working on someone else's.
Well, I think it's also that we can't just do things that we, like you're in the business of improvement. And so you can't just go work for someone and follow their SOP because you're going to look at it and be like, look, this needs to be fixed.
Yeah. I guess I like that. I'm in the business. We're in the business of scale, right? So we take $100,000 monthly, you know, businesses and we turn them into $1 million businesses in a month. And then we scale from there.
Yep.
Like I said, we had one team, I am proud of it because it was damn pretty cool. Like it was less than 7 days, I think 8 days. They did $1.35 million in phone sales. Like that's no joke.
That's huge.
Yeah. Especially at these small businesses. Like we're not talking Google where they do $1 million an hour here. Like we're talking, you know what I mean? Like everyday mom and pop shops that were doing $1 million a year was their goal when they first started. And now we're doing $1,000,000.3536 in, you know, 8 days. Like that's
life changing. And especially these businesses that provide real value to them. I mean, you know, that's because that's the other part is that a business is supposed to solve a problem for someone. So that's, I mean, money is the way that you measure it, but that's the impact that you're having on the people in the communities. And I think that's important to note as well.
You said something very powerful there. And I don't think people are going to hear it if they don't know it. I heard it. You said money is the way they measure it. Measure what? The problem you solve.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Rohn says what? Your net worth is in direct proportion of the problems you solve. The bigger the problem, the bigger the income.
I love Jim so much. I got him on download. I listen to him all the time.
I always remember that. And so for me, what I do is hard. People don't, trying to run multiple sales teams, building sales team from scratch, like that is not actually easy. People say it's easy. It's not. It is challenging. You're dealing with so many moving parts, especially in a virtual scene. But the thing that keeps me in the game is that quote. Yeah. What's the problem I'm solving? I'm solving a massive problem for a business, and it's a challenging problem.
What are some of the skills and behaviors that a small business needs to have to even get there? You talk about
they got to be quick. They got to be nimble. They got to stay light. They cannot let perfection hold them back. They got to test. They got to do. They always got to be marketing and sales. That's it. It's not. Small business has nothing to do with operations, has nothing to do with optimization, has nothing to do with scale. You got to build it. Step one, you got to build it. In order to build it, it's all sales and marketing. Sales and marketing. That is it. If you can't sell it, it ain't shit. I don't care how beautiful it is. I don't care how much time and effort you spent. That was your problem. Many businesses spend so much time building, then they can't sell it. And then now, they spend all this time trying to sell something that can't be sold because they invested their time, dollars, and resources into something that should never have been built.
Yeah. Pre-sales. I like to use Elon
Musk. Sell it. You just said it. Sell it. before you build it. It's plain and simple. Well, look at Elon. I know you're going to say Elon was at
$300 million selling a product. He had no team to build and no factory to make.
But what did, like, this is where people don't get. But how did he build a factory and how did he get the team? With the $300 million that he pre-sold.
Yeah.
Other people's money. Yeah. It's very simple.
But people are nervous to put it out there. That's that pre-sales, you know, in Kingston, Ontario, hometown where I grew up, Canada, there was a gym. I'm not going to advertise for them here, but there was a gym, a brand name gym that was opening up near the mall, the Cataraqui Mall. And they were renovating this building that had been vacant for a while. And they had these trailers outside set up. And they were there for maybe a month and a half, 2 months. And all of a sudden, everything just disappeared. And I saw a buddy of mine one day around town, and he'd been working. I knew he was working in the trailer. I said, hey, what happened? You guys were renovating all this stuff. He's like, oh, we couldn't hit our numbers. So they just closed down. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, we had to get a certain number of members sold prior to construction finishing.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they needed to be profitable when the doors opened, or they just abandoned it and moved on to a different location.
Smart business owners. How many business owners would have went and got a loan?
Yeah.
Try to push through.
Yeah.
And day one opened up and said it's going to come, and 3 years later, bankrupt.
Yeah.
Now here's the hard part. They could have saved themselves 3 years of that pain, all that money wasted, if they would have just listened. We're stubborn, but you gotta like, for me, like, I probably pull too soon. My thing is I probably pull too soon, meaning like I'll test it. Maybe I don't test it long enough. And then I'm like, nope, done. Because I've seen.
How do you run a test? How do you run a test? Can you speak to that a little bit? Because a lot of people are like, okay, Kayvon, I'm listening to you. I'm vibing. But how do I test it? I just asked one person.
There's A-B testing, and then there's A-B testing, right? Like testing messages. And if you have a list, you test your list. You email your list and you ask your list. And you just get the response from your list. It's like, that's the free way of doing it, right? If you don't have a list, go to the market, go on social media, go live, see if people respond to it. That's another free way of doing it, or a paid way we do it. We just blast Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this guy took it to the extreme and I love it. And I've seen another company just doing it. And I'm like, well, then there's something I'm learning right now. They don't even test the landing page.
Yeah, they're just testing the
ad. They don't have a landing page. Yeah. They just test the ad and they say, click here. And when you click, it goes to nothing.
Yep.
It goes to nothing. How can you do that? Who gives a shit? Like, this is the thing we think, especially online, right? Like, I mean, again, if you're a small business in a small town, like, you got to worry about stuff like that. But like online, who cares? You're testing. So they don't even like, I'm like, okay. So then they figured out the ad. Now they're figuring out like the VSL, you know, like the sales page. And there's like seven products in there. I'm like, those aren't built. He's like, yeah, we're not building them. I'm like, oh, you're right. They're not even going to build. Like, for instance, the OTOs. They're not built. They're testing the OTO. If the OTO sells, then they'll build it.
Yeah.
Right. That's how you test.
For people that don't know, OTO, one-time offer. So he's talking about come to the page. So what they're trying to do first is they're doing market interest tests. They're putting ads out there. They're testing messaging and offers and hooks and appeals. Because the same, like a great example, when I'm at martial arts school, I tested five different target audiences. I had like stay-at-home moms, I had military personnel, fire rescue, police. I had university kids. I forget what the fifth one was. And then I had 11 different hooks. I had lose weight, stay in shape, compete and win, learn self-defense, make friends, you know, like all this sort of stuff. And the number one combination performed 1,100% better than the number two combination. And nothing else was profitable other than those two out of 55 combinations. And the thing that it was like a license to print money. It was free fighter fitness and skill assessment. If you qualified, free 30 days.
So what's the underlying message? You got to be willing to let go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing. You got to be willing to let go. Because like when you just said that, yeah, I did this for stay home moms. Do you know how many people would have been like, I'm doing stay home moms. I'm going to go against the grain, figure it out, break with my back. To try to get the one stay-home mom that might be interested.
Yeah.
But like that, again, the wrong offer to the wrong market.
Yeah.
Move. Don't be so addicted or so attached.
Yeah, you know, this reminds me of a story. I've heard different people say different versions, but this is the version that I was told. And it was when I lived in Japan. It was that Tokyo University had bought some land and was expanding their campus. And that's a big deal because they sell buy sell buildings often, but not land because it's an island. So they were building these buildings and it was a big deal. And there was a site manager and a project manager. And the site manager was managing the tradespeople. The project manager had the blueprints and they built the buildings, right? The buildings were built and they were pulling out all the heavy machinery. And the site manager comes to the project manager and goes, hey, where are we putting in the parking lot? Where do we want the benches and the gardens? And, you know, like all this stuff. And the project manager said, hey, you know, it's September's almost here. It's going to be, the campus is going to open. Winter's going to come. Let's come back and do that in the spring. And the site manager said, what are you talking about? We got everyone here. Let's just do it now. Just draw the lines on the map. Tell me where you want it. And the project manager said, no, we're going to wait. And they argued. Project manager won and they waited. And the campus filled up with people. And the snow fell and the ground got hard. And then in the spring, when the ground was soft and they came back, they didn't need drawings on a map because the people made paths from this door of this building to that door of that building. Those cars all gathered in one section. They just built to fit the people. And so what I'm going to say is, like, with the testing, you've got to set these tests up and see where are people going and then build to suit them.
I like it. It's listen to the market. It's called listen to the market. That's what you're saying. Like, and again, it goes to ego of a sale, of a business owner. Don't matter.
Yep.
Don't matter what you like. Don't matter what you think is good. Don't matter if you like it or not. All that matters is the market buying it. So why do I say that? You know what I mean? Beautiful, like lead magnets and beautiful websites I built with beautiful brands and logos that I loved. And the market didn't bite. And then someone comes along and builds something that I think is absolutely hideous. Like, I don't even want my name by it. But okay, go test it. And that's why when people come to me and go, what do you think of this copy? I go, I don't know. Doesn't matter what I think.
I'm not your buyer.
Doesn't matter what I think. Test it. Have you tested it? Is it working?
Now
we can try to obviously get in line and we can obviously try our best to try to get the bullseye. But like, I'm not the one that's going to tell you if it's a bullseye or not, because you know how many times I thought it was a bullseye and I got it wrong?
Yeah. Gary Halbert, the famous copywriter, used to say anytime he was working on a project, he used to go down to the pub and read it to his friends. And he said, whenever they told me this is great, well, that sounds so good, he said he knew he had to go back and work on it. Because when he read it and they said, how much is it? Or they started asking, like, where do I get one? Then he knew he had a hitter, right?
And
his test, because they'll still say anything. Would you recommend like Facebook ads or a list, or would you recommend phone calls? Like, how do you recommend doing that first kind of getting your market intelligence?
Well, it all depends. I mean, the business and all of that, right? Obviously, it's easier on Facebook ads if you have a little budget and a good Facebook buyer, ad buyer to test, because you can test to more people. But like I said, if you don't have that dollar or that team, it's simple. Like, get on the phone, get on live on your socials, like write a post. Like, I see guys that are doing $20 million months still on their personal Facebook, going to their community saying, guys, I'm coming out with a new product. What do you think of this name or that name? It's what you do.
Yeah, I asked because
it's not hard. The crazy thing is none of this shit's hard now.
But
like with GPT and everything, it's not hard. It's called execution.
Yeah.
Do you execute? Can you get it done?
Yeah.
And if you can't, you're just doomed.
So, you know, it's funny because you say that at the beginning of COVID, everyone was arguing about the science of this, the science of that. I'll keep the story short, but somebody did something that I thought was unscrupulous and it pissed me off because I'm in the coaching space. So I thought, well, what do people say about business success? What does the science say about business success? And I ended up spending about 50 grand of my own money to hire a team of research assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success to figure out what really moves the needle for small and medium-sized businesses. And we actually identified 8 critical success factors. And they are self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, business intelligence. Those are the 8 umbrella categories: HR, cybersecurity, legal. Yeah. Put under those 8 umbrellas. And people always say, Daryl, what's the one ring, you know, to rule them all? And I always say it has to be self-efficacy. Because if you can't execute, if you can't manage yourself, your time, your life, how many business owners do we know that had the right offer to the right message to the right person, but the owner couldn't get out from, you know what I mean? They couldn't
get out from underneath them. That's what I said. They can't go from being a $1 million a year business to a $10 million business because the owner is not willing to become the person who needs to do that.
Right.
And if you as the owner who's leading the business is not willing to do that, no one else on your team will.
Yeah. And sometimes people are just too slow. Like, you can't outsmart everything. You can't outthink anything. Sometimes it's just about execution. It's just about getting things done. It's about doing what you can with the time that you got. It's about understanding that not all things kill you and eat you in the jungle. Some things just feed on you as long as possible. And for example, like social media wants you to spend as much time on there as possible. But I have sleep and life goals. Those are my settings.
Yeah.
My phone doesn't ring. It doesn't vibrate. It doesn't beep. There's no notifications on the screen because it is my tool to interact with the world. I plan my day and I do my best. And you don't win every day, but you got to show up. And if my phone's not there, so someone can jump up and interrupt my day.
I don't even know where my phone is. I don't even bring it to my office anymore. I'll look at my phone at the end of the day, truly.
So it sounds like kind of the three things, at least for self-efficacy, you got to take care of yourself. You got to make sure that you're showing up. We have specifics on that. Then it's market intelligence, which you've done so much talking about here. The business graveyard is littered with world-class products and services that were either ahead of their time or nobody knew about them. And then it's the strategic planning. What's the plan? What's your strategic plan to bring it to market? What's your strategic plan to deliver something that's unique, not just a me too? What's your strategic plan to make sure people are happy when they buy? Because if you're getting more refunds in your sales, you got to climb out of that hill. You know, like that's, it's going to do you a disservice. And then it's the market. Yeah. Then it's the sales that's built on that foundation.
100%.
What do you see in the future? If you had your crystal ball with AI, all this sort of stuff, where do you see things moving?
Oh, I'm a little scared about that. If you're not using AI, you're done. It's not even a question of like even mom and pop retail traditional, like there's ways to implement AI to optimize. I hope AI doesn't take completely over the internet. I don't see how it can't. If you even know, if like, I'm not an AI expert. I do a little research. I got some people I speak to. I know some experts that are heavily in it. So if I ever have to, I call them a little bit. So I want to be very clear when I say that. But what I know they know and what I know I see, I have a hard time believing that we will not be completely replaced when it comes to all things digital internet marketing, truly. And if we're not, it's not going to just be the survival of the fittest. It's going to be like the 1.10001% of the people who adopted AI, understand AI, and know how to make AI work for them. And then they put the human element on top of it. Anything less than that, we're doomed. Now, do I think in 10 years, robot will come to my door, knock on it, ask me if I want someone to clean my windows. And then a week later, the robot window cleaner comes and starts cleaning it. No, I don't believe we're there yet in 10 years. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we were. How about that? But I don't think we're there. Now, someone said I'm probably a little too concerned about it. I said, okay, I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. I just know that there's an opportunity to capitalize and I'm going to capitalize on it. And that's just what it is. And it's hard because for me, it's a touchy when you ask that question because it's not my strength. I'm not a data analytical, sit behind the screen, try to figure out tinker kind of stuff. I'm a sales guy and AI is that. So how do I leverage my best abilities into AI so that I'm not just well-versed, but well-equipped? And that's the question I keep asking myself.
Cyborg thing. I think we're already cyborgs now. You and I are talking from different ends of the planet. It's just not embedded in our biology. We're using the microphone to amplify our voice and recording. People have been saying that humans are going to be unnecessary forever. The term useless leader was like around Leonardo da Vinci mentions in one of his manuscripts. You can read it.
Well, no, I'm happy about it. Like I said then I would say this. If you want to hear like the podcast line, I believe the whole idea of AI replacing humans is false. But what I do believe is humans who know how to use AI will replace humans who don't. Right. What's his name has the best quote, and I'm going to mess it up because I always do, but it's one of the best quotes. And it says something like this: in times of change, the learners will inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves living in a world beautifully equipped in a world that no longer exists.
Ooh, I like that.
I always butcher it, but it's a long one.
No, it's a good.
I'm going to get it for you right now. It was an Eric Hoffer. It's an Eric Hoffer quote. And it says this: in times of change, learners inherit the earth, while learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. It is so true. If we look at history, it is so true. If we look at the internet, when the internet first came, people knew the internet was something. And the ones that adopted and got in early were the ones that changed the world. And all the ones that, we don't need email, I don't need this. Cell phone. The ones who adopt cell phones became faster, more amount. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, there's so many times. Here's even another one. COVID, believe it or not. Yep. I said this at the beginning of COVID and I was like, how can nobody see it? I said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have two camps. You're going to have people who come through COVID who looked at this as a vacation of life. They got their stimulus checks. They chilled out. They relaxed, played the games, had fun, drank the booze that they shouldn't have been drinking, all that stuff. And they're going to come back thinking they're going to live in a world that was once was. And there's going to be a new camp of people that realize this is a time of change. This is a time for you to work on yourself. The world is not going to be the same. There's no way that this can happen in the world. We go back and everything's married. I got to adapt. I got to invest. I got to invest my time, my skills, my resources. And sure enough, how many people became millionaires, as I would say, in COVID because they went online and understood online, which they never would have in the first place. Mm-hmm. And how many people in COVID, workers, you know, waiters, all those types of people thought when they got back, it was going to be the same.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is in Canada. Sorry, in the world. In Canada, the restaurant industry is down like 35%.
Yeah.
That is massive.
Yeah.
Waiters are not making as much money as they once were because nobody's going out. But guess what? What happened after COVID? Everything tripled in price.
Yeah.
The world is no longer the same.
Yeah.
So if you are a learner, you are going to adapt. So we're in it right now. So in times of change, the people who adopt AI will inherit the earth, mm-hmm. while the ones who are scared of AI and don't think AI will take over will find them beautifully equipped in a world that no longer exists.
Well, I agree. I think it's like people that wanted to do it when spreadsheets came out. You can't, when spreadsheets first came out, you could adopt or you couldn't. When calculators came out, you could adopt or you couldn't. And so I think that that's probably a good spin on it. You know, Kayvon, I want to be respectful of your time. This has been a great interview. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked
you? Wow, there's so many things. I think I got to come on another time. But listen, if anyone even likes anything I was saying and you are a business and you're stuck at $100,000 a month, and you want to learn how to get to $1 million a month, all you got to do is kayvon.com, kayvon.com. And from there, we'll direct you to where you need to go.
Sounds like a plan. So go check out kayvon.com, kayvon.com. Kayvon, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate you.
Your own family, your own audience, your own following, your own clients. Thank you for coming and sharing with all of us. We can all do a bit better.
And let's make sure we do this again sometime soon. Appreciate you.